It's time to get down to business with $30 a month business internet. WOW Business offers 99.9% network reliability so that you can keep your business moving. $30 a month gets you 30 megabytes per second with 24/7 US-based support, a price lock guarantee, and a 60-day satisfaction guarantee. Lock in our lowest priced offer for the support you need. Go to switchtowellbusiness.com. Offer for new customers with a 2-year agreement subject to change. Prices do not include taxes, fees, and equipment charges. Restrictions apply.
Adventures from the Potbelly Kobold, a book containing 15 short 5th edition adventures designed by some of the RPG's industry's greatest talent. A few of the adventures are
Into the Clouds by J.V.C. Perry,
Blue Moon by Kat Evans,
Shattered Grace by Sly Flourish,
Clunk Spindle's Clockwork Conundrum by M.T. Black,
Redeemed with Fire by Sean Merwin.
The adventures are designed to be used individually, giving a game master the ability to run a quick one-shot or allowing them to drop the adventure into their own campaign. The Pot-Bellied Kobold also has a way to link several of the adventurers, providing you with a short campaign.
Woohoo!
Head on over to jeffstevensgames.com and check out his Kickstarter today. Hello and welcome, heroes, to the Crit Academy. I am your host, Justin.
I'm your co-host, Austin.
And I'm your co-host, Ian.
This podcast was created to provide you, our heroes, with new and reusable material for both players and DMs.
We hope to inspire you with creative content that you can bring with you on your next adventure.
Our show may not be suitable for young children, but neither is our D&D games.
Nope.
No, sir.
Yeah.
Not really.
Nope.
I'm really excited for today's episode. It's very rare that we do an episode that, while is usually purely focused on aspects of the players and their abilities, today we're covering Bigby's Handbook of Creative Spell Use, which to me, while there's a lot for the DM, this is definitely something I think every player should pick up, because who doesn't want to just find ways to combine spells to just destroy everything?
And if you don't necessarily use all the combinations in there, it'll get your ticker thinking.
Oh, for sure. But before all that, if you enjoy the show and you'd like to help support us, you can head on over to CritAcademy.com. Check out our Patreon page at patreon.com/CritAcademy. Mm-hmm. Maybe pick up some of our best-selling supplements or just subscribe to our newsletter and be entered to win fat loots every single week.
Yeah.
That's how we roll around here. We want to thank you guys for joining us here today at Crit Academy, where everything's made up and your rolls don't matter.
Yep, that's right. Your rolls are like a spell that you can't use with another person. Something like that.
Oh, yeah. It was blank. It's like Bigby without his
handbook of spells.
Or handbook of spells. I like that one, too. Because Bigby's hand is one of the iconic spells in the book.
Yeah.
Let's talk about blank segment today. I want to take a minute to talk about we have a special release. I know on our show we always talk about how our game isn't suitable for children. Anybody that's been listening to any episodes of our show knows that I often talk about running games for the kids at church.
Which I find hilarious.
It is, because especially with the Satanic Panic and some older people being nuts at that stuff. I had a lot
what
of
a mess of just right. themes all together. Just
I saw my son summoning demons. Okay.
Isn't that the bigger story?
Right, yeah, right.
Yeah. Like, how, what did it look like? Did you talk to it? I want to know. Like,
so with the encouragement of my grandpa, Bill, and my pastor, Reverend Glenn Grant, they encouraged me to find a way to get this out there so that we could share this with other churches. I mean, that's part of, you know, our mission. So I went ahead and I took all the OGL rules and I compiled them and made a adventure for currently the one that'll be releasing on 10/9/20 or October 9th. That's next week. So as this, if you're listening, watching this live or before then, hey, maybe consider
it's
picking it up.
It's literally in 5 days.
It's the Living Testament, the Three Magi. Basically, it drops our players, our disciples, right alongside the three Magi as they are seeking out the newborn king. And they get to interact with them, you know, disrupt all of Herod's evil plans.
Yeah.
Which is fun. And then, you know, escort and protect Joseph and Mary why they escape with baby Jesus. So I really had nice. a very interesting
concept in general to run with.
I'm already getting questions about, well, what about magic? I'm going to be honest. It's very limited. Most of the classes that are in there are like the rogue, the barbarian,
the ranger type
stuff. I think I combined the scout. I made some combination things, but the big thing is we have disciples, which are basically clerics.
Mm-hmm.
And then I reflavored and rewrote some of the wizards for alchemy and stuff instead. So instead of pointing in a fireball exploding, you're throwing a little canister and it explodes.
Yeah.
AKA a grenade. So, and I called it, it's no longer magic, it's miracles. So I there was a lot of work that went into this.
Yeah, I can imagine there was a lot of, of reflavoring and a lot of,
rewriting.
So. Yeah.
But it was really fun and I hope that, it does really well. You look like you were going to say something, but you were kind and didn't cut me off. So I appreciate that.
Yep. Basically, that made me think of one time where somebody years ago asked me,
this way.
Like, how can you justify being a Christian playing D&D? I look back at them, because it's not real.
It's fake. It's make-believe.
Yeah.
It's a game. Why are you overthinking this?
That's a real big one, isn't it? It's right. Like, wait, you're serious. It's like that kind of thing. It's like, fake. How do you get to this conclusion? My conclusion's a lot easier to jump to than yours is.
Yeah, right.
Like in all honesty. Yeah.
And one of the things that's really hard as a educator of, you know, my faith, it's hard to engage children. To be able to do it in a way that they really had fun. I mean, they would come out of these running to their mom saying, "Oh my gosh, I had so much fun." And so
That in and of itself is also a challenge. I used to actually teach kids for a little while, and that was, it came with a lot of its own challenges, especially when some stuff went down between a lot of the working staff and the pastor, and it's just there was a lot of like disconnect, and that just all went downhill really fast. But kudos to my friend who is still there. You're doing great, buddy. I know you're not watching this, but I know that you'll probably hear me one day.
I think he's about to go break my toilet.
Yep. Yeah, well, you know.
That's okay. Anyways, I'm really excited for it to come out. It'll be releasing on DriveThruRPG and Amazon. You can pick it up at our website. It will be in print. Cool. So I'm really excited. So hopefully you guys will support this project if this is something you find interesting. It's definitely a deviation from what I normally do.
I was going to say. Question about it, just because we may as well talk a little bit more about it since it is something that we are actively putting out. Because you kind of changed a little bit of the main things in there, because you said there was a limitation on magic. What exactly did you change? I know it sounded like you combined some of the subclasses, it sounded like.
So I combined some of the features from the rogue and the ranger because I didn't feel like the need for an archetype that's all about killing and stealing was probably a good thing to have in this.
Yeah.
So there was some of that, and it actually, surprisingly, it worked out really, really well. It's almost a completely new class just based off some of those features. With the spell casting, I removed just certain classes. There's no sorcerer, there's no warlock. Now it's 5th edition compatible, so if that's something you decide you want to bring to the table, that's okay. But for me, it was trying to keep it a little more
just tame.
Yes.
I guess is a good word.
There's not like elemental monsters or anything like that. The monster manuals narrow down to things that have been talked about. Like there's giants, because you know Goliath was a giant, right? So I've left things like that and some of the more interesting monsters, but a lot of it is a little bit more tame. Like when I was running it for the kids, when they were, you know, part of it is running a skill challenge to navigate through the desert following a star. Well, they're getting attacked by bandits, so there's, you know, things like that. There's a variety of different like NPCs, monsters such as like, you know, wolves and bears. All that stuff is kind of present. There's killer bees and insects, and I went kind of wild with some of the insects and stuff like that, like scarabs and stuff. But it definitely required it to be more tame, considering where it was being brought.
For the audience it's being to,
Now, because it's 5th edition compatible, you aren't limited to that, but that's what I felt needed to be, because the idea was to bring this product that somebody can pick up and run this story and understand all the rules. There's pre-generated characters in it. There's no character creation rules or anything like that, because that would require a much bigger book and cost, so it was trimmed down to be able to just give to the kids.
Now,
if this is something people end up liking, we will go back and we will add enhancements to that, but the goal is to release, like, you know, themed Bible themed adventures, like the Easter theme, and this one's about Christmas time. So it was a lot of work, and it was fun. I enjoyed it, and the kids always had a blast, and having my pastor's kind of approval and encouragement really helped, because I wouldn't have thought to try something like this.
Right, and so, unless he, like, came up to you with it.
Yeah. Yeah, so.
That makes sense.
Did I actually even answer your question?
No, you kind of did, yeah. You did.
I kind of went on a ramble there.
You got the general basis, and then you kind of went on to more of what I was going to ask anyway, so it kind of worked out. Yeah. But I guess that would be, or let's talk about Blank.
Yeah.
Then, yeah, but. We also have gifts to give away, because, you know, Loresmith.
We always
give away
fat loots.
Loresmith likes to hang out for us for a little bit here and there. but right now, they're giving away the modular dungeon tiles, the Arcania set. Now, the Arcania set, the modular dungeon tiles are an easy way to create your own beautiful digital maps. Now, the Arcania set in specific lets you make these dark, shadowy dungeon maps rich with the fumes of arcane secrets. It's a little bit harder to tie it in with something Christian when it's a little more about dark and doom.
Yeah, yeah, well, you know, can't win them all.
Yeah, maybe this one's a little harder. Well, maybe you'll find something closely related to something holy in, like, a hole in the wall somewhere, and you'll be like, oh, this is the light that will shine away the darkness. There you go.
Safe. I like that.
There we tried something there.
Who's our winner today, Austin?
Our winner today is White Gary. Good on you, Gary.
Congratulations. If you didn't win, have no fear. You can head on over to critacademy.com/loresmith and get some free digital terrain, some one-shots, and some other fat loots.
I gotta check out the fact that I walked in there. At least, like, I'm really thrown off right now because you're still on screen due to the delay, and then you just walked right in front of me.
That's funny. So, on to our main topic today. Bigby's Handbook of Creative Spell Uses. It's very rare that you come across a book that's so focused on optimization. Was that the right word?
Or teamwork.
Yeah, because
both
work.
I think both would work
best with having multiple people that can do those effects. So,
Especially since some of these combos require multiple concentration spells.
Yes,
that sounds brutal.
Yeah. So, what is this? The handbook includes an annotation from one and only Bigby, that he's a big part of, you know, D&D character lore and stuff, by the great Rob Kuntz, a founding member of Greyhawk's Circle of Eight, if you're a big Greyhawk fan. It offers a host of amazing, super creative, and raw adhering spell and caster combos to help optimize and get the most out of your spell casting. Now, if you listen to the show, one of the things that I really struggle with every episode is player tips. Well, here's a whole damn book of them.
Yeah, literally just pages of them.
70 pages to be exact. 50 creative techniques for spell uses and caster team-ups, and it's 100% rules as written. That's huge.
Yes.
Because there's no
There's really no argument. Yeah. You kind of just have to... If your DM's like, well, I can't be right because it's not a supplement. Well, here's the thing. They don't know who they're referring to. So
this product was brought by some pretty big names in the DM's Guild world. Phil Beckwith has always done some amazing work. And some of these people I'm just seeing for the first time. Others I've seen throughout other publications. But I definitely think they went a very different way. First of all, the cover art's awesome.
I love it. Like, and it's a big hand in the way.
Yeah.
About it.
And his hands behind it, his little spectral hands behind him too, which is pretty cool.
Yeah.
But it's in landscape. Now, I haven't seen Landscape since some of the 4th edition Dungeons and Dragons magazines. The separate ones, not the Dungeons. Anyway, since those magazines, because they were in Landscape. And honestly, I really love Landscape. And the fact that when I hold it on my phone, which you usually hold your like phone up, but you can turn it sideways and you can get up to 3, 4, 5, 5. How many columns? Is it 3?
Three
columns, I think. Three columns of information, which actually is more than you would fit. I feel like it's more. It seems like it's more, but definitely less page turning.
Mm-hmm.
But for this unique format, it actually worked really, really well, too.
That actually takes me back to some of my psychology classes back in college. Oh, you think this is more, but it's actually the same size as this.
Right. It looks like it.
I think it just helps. The reason I think it looks bigger, or it looks like it gives more space, is because it's applying all the information pretty concisely on the page. Mm-hmm. Whereas you see three columns, you're like, oh, there has to be more here. When in reality, if it was just the same size page, it'd be like two just larger columns.
It's like when you buy a medium cup and a large cup, and they're the same size of liquid, same amount of liquid.
My old psychology teacher, as I was saying before, gave an example of he used to be a bartender, and he would, of course, give people the drinks when they order something. But then somebody else would order a specific type of drink that comes in a special type of glass that was like really tall.
Mm-hmm.
And the first guy would be like, I want that one, it's bigger. No, it's the same size. It's just tall and skinny.
And there was, I don't want to get into it, but there was some people that got in trouble for running some sketchy shit like that. So there's a lot of content, like I said, 50 of these tips and tricks, basically. Now, there is a whole page dedicated that looks like it's handwritten by Bigby, which I love. Whoever did this,
very
did a
classy.
Fantastic job. The character persona is great. So, well done. That being said, is there any... there's a couple of these that I really, really enjoyed. So, we're going to pick a few that we're going to talk about. And obviously, we're not going to cover all of them. We'll probably each pick one or two, and then we'll go on. Ian, was there any particular one you thought was interesting that you think we should talk about?
I read quite a few of these, and they all kind of blurred together after a while.
Okay. Well,
but one I thought was kind of neat was, this is one of the earlier ones. Actually, it's the second one, The Artful Dodger.
The Artful Dodger?
I did the back. It was the first one.
Nice. So what about the art? What is The Artful Dodger?
I was actually looking at this one, too. I was like, this one actually seems kind of interesting because it actively uses a background.
Yes.
Yeah.
Which is definitely awesome.
That was part of it because you don't see too many strategies that revolve around backgrounds, which
I think,
well, let's be real here. More games should probably lean into that just to add that much more, not just flavor, but...
You guys have features on them, and people tend to not realize that.
You guys made a big stink about it when I did the encounter and included that background. And now that I think about it, that doesn't get you done very often.
No, it doesn't.
So that's a big deal.
Like, I lost how many times where I've taken like the folk hero background and show up in a towel, and I'm like, why does nobody know who I am?
I don't get it. So about The Artful Dodger, maybe talk about the layout a little bit and how it's structured.
Yep. As we were saying before, because it's in a landscape format, we have three different columns.
Mm-hmm.
It starts off as the prereqs. The first one being somebody in the party needs the urgent background. Then you need somebody who's a spellcaster, such as like a trickery domain cleric, druid, paladin of the vengeance domain, or oath of glory, something that gets the spells needed.
Right.
But basically the spells that they're going to need is Pass Without a Trace in haste on top of the urgent background, and it does mention the material components needed, but I think it's more for flavor than anything else for the spell components.
Okay.
And but basically, as we know, the urgent background, they generally speaking know the layout of like cities better than anybody else, therefore they can get through places at double the speed as anybody else. So you basically take somebody with
most times undetected as well.
Yeah. And then basically to do that, you take the urchin, you cast Pass Without a Trace, and you cast haste on them. That way they can blow through a city like that, deliver messages, deliver packages, or help the party move through areas very quickly and without getting caught.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's great when you're being chased down
when
by
people.
When
they're on town watch.
Mm-hmm. Actually, it would fit very well into that one encounter that we...
Yeah, the encounter last week, I was just thinking that, it would fit right in.
When you're trying to dodge the mafia or guards, however you want to lay it out.
Right.
Yeah.
And this would definitely... this would do it. I mean, How do you challenge it, right?
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, the sheer buff of Pass Without a Trace is ridiculous, and then, you know,
and
it's insane.
I think, like, the one drawback, though, that this does mention is haste only lasts for about a minute, but let's face it.
Pretty far in a minute when somebody's chasing you.
Especially when they're hasted. Especially if they're a rogue.
Right, yeah.
It second is... story work for a thief would be having a ball right now. Gone.
I do think it's interesting that you mentioned the one of the drawbacks, because there is a section for each of these for cautions and limitations, which I think is genius, because I don't ever bother any advice I give. I never really consider the caution.
Yeah, you're like, whatever. You'll figure it out.
Don't die.
And what I also think is a nice touch, too, is in a lot of these sections, they also give you variations, saying, okay, you may not have all these spells, but here's something that's close to that could fill that similar gap. And one of those here is, like, it doesn't even say, depending on your DM's ruling, on you also could use Longstrider instead.
Okay,
that's interesting. No,
that makes sense.
Yeah, I like stuff like that. So I like that they include the variation or the variant, if for whatever reason you can't quite get it.
When it applies, of course.
To work right. Yeah.
I like the name of that one.
Which
right
one?
There. Grease Lightning.
Grease Lightning?
What on earth?
And Longstrider, in a nutshell, because nobody ever uses this spell because I forgot it existed.
Yeah.
Is basically for an hour you have plus 10 feet to your movement.
Yeah. Which is good.
That.
Boom.
And it lasts a whole hour instead of a minute.
Yeah.
Yes.
Means less spell slots consumed.
Right.
So you just picked out one that I think is interesting. So do you want to tell us a little bit about Greased Lightning?
Yeah, this is a wonderful name.
Greased Lightning is burning up the 401. Greased Lightning, go! Sorry.
The prereqs. You need an artificer, a ranger, a wizard with an available first or third slot, you know.
Right.
For required spells.
Basically, prereqs.
You need spellcasters. Required spells, you need Lightning, Arrow, and, well, Grease.
I do love that it gives you the reference of the pages and everything.
That is a nice touch.
I was just laughing at the fact that there's literally a spell called Grease. I never knew that was a thing, to be honest.
I reflavored it once as barf.
That makes sense.
My wizard always got sick, so he just converted it into a weapon. He would throw up and just grease everywhere.
Blech.
I know, that's a little bit of a weird reflavor, but I was playing a big fat wizard guy.
Yeah, there you go.
He ate too much till he threw up.
You need some material components, which is just a bit of pork rind or butter.
I love material components.
That gets so out there.
No, that's interesting.
So it allows the ranger to take a seemingly useless weapon, like a net, and create a lightning charge damage-dealing restraint from hell. The combination can be used regularly in combat. It can even be built into a very unique and entertaining backstory. Using a net to attack, this technique will transform the net into a bolt of lightning, dealing 48 lightning damage on hit or half as much damage on a miss. In addition, each creature within 10 feet must succeed on the dexterity saving throw or take 2d8 additional lightning damage on a failed save or half as much on a successful one.
Get wrecked.
Now, on a successful attack, the lightning bolt will transform back into a net, restraining the target. Restrained targets have a movement speed of 0 as well as disadvantage on all dexterity saving throws. Casting Grease allows you to take advantage of this condition, and if you are able to knock the target prone due to its movement speed, it will be unable to get up. The only way to free itself by either succeeding on a TC-10 strength check or by doing 5 slashing damage to the net.
Oh my gosh.
Finally, by using either the Unseen Servant spell or Mending Cantrip, enemies can be continually targeted and potentially restrained by endless net attacks.
Because
you keep repairing the damn net.
Or replacing it. Oh my gosh.
So, savage. There are some instructions here, which is cast Lightning Arrow, make
Step
a net attack, and then cast Grease. You're done. That's it. That's pretty straightforward.
This has got some pretty great utility. I see you can prepare an ambush. That's awesome.
This is kind of silly. It's kind of good.
There's some crazier things in here. The one I want to talk about is really interesting.
This is kind of really good. I've never... like, who would think this?
One of the utilities has proved to the DM that the net is actually a worthy weapon. man. So this is interesting. I never realized this. It says restrain creatures without slashing weapons.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like... They have to tear it out, which
it
I mean, for big
by,
boss monsters,
it
they won't
It says in
about.
Here, by doing slashing damage. So, piercing and strength, no matter how high it is,
Well, you have to. You can succeed in the DC 10 strength check.
Well, that's true, but still. If you're fighting something that's got a piercing weapon, I mean, they just go through the holes.
Yeah, they kind of they can't cut it.
That's such a small, minute detail
that actively works.
Yeah, that's awesome. Is there any other utilities that are listed here?
There's a few, like using the mount with a flying speed or to fly spell to clip an arrow enemy's wings from above.
Oh, dropping a net on them and shit. They just fall to the ground.
You just airstrike a net on them that's made of lightning.
And one thing I liked about the supplement too, in this increased lightning is a good example of this, is was reading through this, like, use this spell, like, wait, that's a spell?
Yes.
You didn't know it.
Just because some of these spells that it uses aren't used that often.
Right.
And so I brought it up just now, I'm like, oh, you take a thrown weapon, and then you make the attack as normal, and the target takes an additional 4d8 lightning damage. Like, huh, that's pretty nice,
it
actually.
It says lightning arrow.
Yeah.
But it isn't necessarily gotta be an arrow.
It's just your lightning javelin. You just become Thor temporarily.
Or an axe.
See, that's awesome. That's a deceiving, it should be like lightning weapon or something.
Yeah. I also like how it says here, since there are no saving throws to avoid the damage from the lightning arrow, or to avoid being restrained by the net attack, this is a technique with a high success rate.
Yeah.
Oh, gosh.
Because you can't dodge it.
Well, you can. Dodge! It's just AC and not save.
Yeah. Right,
which makes it an easier... Yeah, that's awesome.
It depends, honestly, because that would be on, like, I guess, enemy-by-enemy basis, right?
Yeah.
Right. No.
But you just turned your net into a javelin.
Oh, geez,
I love that idea. That's funny.
That's so savage.
It really is.
Like, they did a number. Now, there's one in here, and I'm trying to find what it's called, and it has to do with throwing coins, I think, but I don't see where it's called here, and I didn't write it down.
Damned if you do, damned if you don't.
Well, I know I have thrown coins in the past by casting light on them first and throwing them down a dark
tunnel. Yeah, I think that's a pretty common one, I think.
Yeah.
Common use for that. You know, I was playing Celesta. You can only enchant objects like equipment. I was devastated by that. I found it.
No.
Money monsters.
Now, there's a lot of great ideas in here. And as a DM, do not be surprised if you guys run into this, because holy crap. So... the prerequisites, basically, require you to have access to Crusader's Mantle and animate objects. Now, doesn't seem like a big deal. Oh, and 10 coins, right? You gotta have coins.
Yeah, you gotta have a little bit of money on
it. Crusader's Mantle, if I'm not mistaken, increases the party's damage output moderately. Not a big deal on it in and of itself. Mm-hmm. However, potentially dealing an extra 20d4 plus 40 damage to an enemy each round is just plain disgusting.
Yeah, that's horrifying.
Enjoy the carnage as the spellcaster throws 10 coins into the air and animates them into tiny little terrors that feeds off the aura of the Crusader Mantle, buffing it because they're animated creatures, right? Allies. Combining the ability to create multiple attacking allies in a fight with Crusader's Mantle significantly increases the party's damage output. Use the coins. Using coins creates additional benefits for the party as well, like flying attackers that can hover, attackers with blindsight.
Oh my god!
The increased chances to hit your opponent just outright. Using coins, which are tiny versus other sized objects, grant several other advantages to your party. The object coins have higher AC, attack bonus, damage modifier. This basically makes Money Monster's technique one of the most valuable combat techniques your party can ever have.
All right, Crusader's Mantle, 30-foot radius from you and all friendly creatures within the aura, 30-feet radius, deals an extra 1d4 radiant damage.
Yep.
I see where the damage comes from now.
Yes, because I think I think on their own they do, what, one damage?
When you make that many with...
a tiny one?
Yeah, it's not much.
I was going to say, you have to anime object, but I think it's one damage for a tiny object.
I just know
maybe it's 1d4.
I just know enemy object comes with its own table.
It comes with its own set
of
things.
Basically,
Tiny's plus 8 to hit, which is
huge.
That's silly.
Which is actually one of the highest out of all these we're being real here. And the damage is 1d4 plus 4. So,
yeah. Oh, plus 4? Oh my god.
Get wrecked.
Wow. They deal more damage than I thought.
Well,
damage.
Well, the dexterity stat for those tiny ones are 18, so...
Oh, that makes sense. It's just a little coin. You just took some pocket change. You're like, get them, boys.
Just think about it. Like, the paladin releases this energizing aura, and then the wizard's just like, I got you, boy, and just flips the 10 coins into the air, speaks an incantation, they float and start glowing like little golden Super Saiyans, and just start darting around, like little lasers, man. Oh my gosh. It's insane. It really offers a very clever way for the party to significantly maximize its output. You can attack enemies.
It really doesn't require that much.
Right.
In all honesty.
And they fly.
Yeah, they fucking fly. They're like a blind sight.
Yeah, they're a little tiny tornado of hell.
They have blind sight. It's so crazy.
It says, would you have to treat the money monsters as a swarm from Oldie Handy? What is the ruling on tiny objects?
They're just 10 individual creatures.
So, no.
No, they're not a swarm. You have to hit every single one.
Yeah.
You have to.
Like, AoE effects would capture most. How much? What is their armor or their HP? One?
Their HP is not very high, and of course you ask us after I close out of it.
I imagine it's pretty low, and I imagine, well, they have high dexterity.
So, you did mention some of the limitations earlier that spells require concentration.
Yeah.
Both these do. So there is the risk that it gets disrupted if you're not careful.
All right, for the tiny ones, 20 HP, 18 AC.
What level spell is that?
It's relatively high.
I was going to say, I think it's a fifth level. Fifth or third.
Fifth level, yeah.
So it's kind of strong.
Yeah, it is a high up there spell.
But the coins also got to remain in the air of the aura to get the benefit.
Yeah, and the bigger creatures you make too, the less of these you actually create. Like, I think you only get like a huge one, for example. So
right,
but why would you do that when this works so much better?
Yeah, this is now. Admittedly, this only works so well because of the Crusader's Mantle, right? Because actively getting the 1d. What is it? 1d6.
1d4 on top of the 1d4 plus 4.
Okay.
So you're basically doubling their
do they have multi-attack?
No.
I was going to say, then how are they potentially dealing a 20d4 plus 40?
Because there's 10 of them.
Yeah, that's because there's 10. So on their own,
I get it.
And the aura gives them another d4.
And then they have enough. Okay, now that makes sense. Jesus, that's so much.
Right?
Go away, chippers.
They're just fucking.
Could you imagine a big golden plate paladin walking with just a swarm of these golden coins floating around him?
What if he's just wearing it like. Now, here's something. Now, his chainmail is made of these gold coins.
Oh, and they just drop off. They just run at them. That's some dope ass flavor. Like, nobody would expect that. Is your armor made out of coins? Yeah, what of it? Give me your sword. No weapons in the courtroom. Sure.
Yeah. I'm
a monk. I am a weapon.
Well, then you have to wait outside.
So there are a lot of these. I mean, there's 50 of them. One of the good ones was the Minor Illusion and its many uses.
Sickening Death sounds hilarious.
They give a lot of options.
Orbital Bombardment.
Yes, that was actually one I was originally going to talk about. Necromancer's
Death Vice. Oh my lord. Yeah. Some of these sound awesome.
Yeah, they do. And the art really goes well with a lot of them.
It does.
The details are just fantastic. The work is awesome. We covered three, right?
We covered three.
Let's give an orbital bombardment, because why not?
Yeah, that sounds...
Sure.
It sounds silly. It's right there. The one that's...
Yeah, it's in alphabetical order, but I read slow, so... All right, so you want to tell us about orbital bombardment?
Wow, okay, so right off the bat, I just looked. Preparation time is 10 minutes, so this is not during combat.
Right.
But I'm assuming because it's orbital.
Oh, I see where this is going. Required spells, scrying... and Meteor Swarm.
Make it rain, bitches.
Oh my god.
And I want to point out that Meteor Swarm is a ninth level spell.
Yeah, it is a ninth level spell. So is it like...
This technique makes the most...
Meteor Swarm's range is 1 mile?
Right.
And you drop three of them.
From a point you can see.
Yeah, but that's why... Oh,
that's why you use Scry.
That's Scry. So you can just be like, oh, they're on the other side of the mountain. Ah, no biggie. Like, what do you mean, no biggie?
Yeah, I scouted it out the other day, or I used my... Dude, if it's a place you haven't been, you totally can use, like, Find Familiar to scout the area. Because you have to, in order to scry, you have to see, I think, right?
Yep.
So, if you haven't been there, you can easily use like a find familiar to get a look by turning into like a spider and snooping around.
And you can cast spells so that you're familiar too in some cases, so.
That's a lot of spell slots, but that person's getting fucked up. There's
gonna be nothing left.
See, here's the thing. Like
entire cities.
Here's the thing. No one would ever know. No one would know you did it. They just think, oh my god, it's just a catastrophe came out of the sky and obliterated everything.
Dude, this sounds like a campaign
starter. A campaign starter? Yeah. No one knew what happened. No one was around. There's no mages even closely around that who has that kind of power to summon three meteors out of the sky.
You guys go through this complex story arc to figure out who did it, and turned out it was a guy bombarded the wrong city. It was an accident.
He's like, oh, fuck. I'll never be able to show my face ever again.
Oh, it's really good stuff.
Yeah, that is.
And this.
Destroy an enemy within their lair. Wow. Yeah, that's the thing. That's another thing. You can literally just be. Like, the boss would never know. Never. That no one can see, like, a mile out. Yeah.
I mean, like, it would be definitely a challenge. You would really need to do a lot of investigation, but...
Yeah, like, the one thing... The hardest part about this is getting to the point where your group stays long enough to have ninth level spells.
Right.
That's the hardest part.
Yeah.
But holy shit. Yeah, like, yeah, so you absolutely crush whatever's there.
Yeah, this entire book is just... chock full of this stuff. I love the poor man's wall of ice.
Yeah, that picture's hilarious.
Basically allows you to get access to a spell mimic a spell of very high power. And there's a whole bunch of these. Like I said, there's 50 of these. We're not going to cover all of them. The other one I really liked was Ragdoll, which is pretty awesome. Basically just tossing people around and shit.
I never thought of orbital air striking somebody. You basically just call in an AC-130. You're just like, oh yeah, AC-130 inbound. And like your paladin's looking over you like, what the hell are you talking about? And you're just like, oh, don't worry about it. And they hear like like a catastrophe happen just like a mile over. And they're like, what just happened? It's like, oh yeah, don't worry about it. That's my AC-130.
Now, it is worth noting that there is a section called Bigby's Laboratory of Latent Wonders, which require a little bit of interpretation. And I like that they have these because they were things that didn't fit right within Raw, but should be able to work. But may require a little bit of DM fiat. So I think that was really cool. Overall, what do you guys think about it? There's a whole book of this stuff.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy. And the thing is every single one of these I would have never thought of. Like, no. they are so out there, and they're actively using things you wouldn't normally use together at all.
Like and I said, quite a few of these spells, like, wait, that exists?
Mm-hmm. I didn't know there was a grease spell. That's strictly just grease.
That I knew, but I will admit, a lot of that is just from me playing so many video games where that isn't an available spell, so...
Like, all right. I think that'll do it for our... main topic, Bigby's Handbook of Creative Spell Use. You can head on over to critacademy.com/post/episode190.
Yep.
Actually, I'm going to go ahead and also put the link in chat as of right now. And you guys can, if it's something you're interested in, I recommend picking it up because this is a book that will make your DM pull their hair out. Now, once you introduce your DM to this book, don't be surprised if you end up on the wrong... end of an orbital strike.
Yeah. If you just look around, you're like, you know, that looks... Is that a scrying orb? What's going on?
Don't worry about it.
Hey, guys, why'd the sun go out?
Why did the sun go out? It's dark. All right. Before we move on to our other tips and tricks, we have another gift to give away. Ian, would you like to tell everyone about that?
Why, most certainly I can do that. This giveaway comes from Jeff Stevens Games with the Avenger Scourge of the Nightingale, Part 1, A Song of Love. A masked menace terrifies the region, raiding villages to fund her devious plan. Unknowingly, the Avengers stumble into her most recent evil scheme, the kidnapping of a famous performer known as Devon Artis. Their mission is to deliver a ransom and collect Devon. Though, as in most cases, not all goes as planned.
I've said it before and I'll say it again. Jeff Stevens' content is amazing. I'm really excited he'll be joining us next week. So
nice.
Mm-hmm.
This is a fantastic adventure. So, R.F. Paustian.
Sure.
Yeah. Congratulations, you're this week's winner. Product, please take a few moments to let Jeff Stevens know. Head on over to his the DM's Guild and leave him a review. The link will take you right to it that he sends you. So leaving reviews for content creators is single-handedly one of the best things you can do, because it tips over people who are on the fence about whether they want to pick up a product or not.
Yep.
So
pretty good.
If you enjoy it, check out his other ones. It's a part three series. So
yeah.
If you didn't win, have no fear. You can head on over to critacademy.com/Jeff Stevens, get Villains and Layers 3 for free, and Encounters on the Savage Seas 3 for free. Fat loots.
Oh, yeah.
Jeff's all about them fat loots.
Absolutely.
And now, what you've all been waiting for, our Unearthed Tips and Tricks segment, where we bring you new and reusable material for both players and DMs.
We have an interesting character concept for you today.
Yeah, we do.
Ian, would you like to tell us about it?
I can. The Accidental Pact, brought to you by our patron, Robots vs. Dinosaurs.
I mean, I'm in.
A dwarf miner who sings while working. And he unwittingly formed a pact with a demon residing deep underground while he sang the lyrics to an old folk tune. Which also turns out to be a summoning ritual.
Huh.
His peck axe is now imbued with unholy strength, and they have no idea why.
That's wow. Awesome.
Our patron supposes that this character will be a warlock slash bard, and whenever he sings, magical things just seem to happen around them. And he is always surprised or nonplussed because his only goal is to get back to work in the mine.
Oh, that's fantastic.
He's like, I just, look, guys, I'm just trying to get back home. I didn't really want to go to the Giant's Lair.
I want to go back to mine.
I just want to dig some rocks.
That would be such an interesting story. Like,
although I gotta say, the architecture here is fantastic.
is the Hexblade the one that has the magical weapon?
Yep.
I think that would really fit this really well.
Well, technically, whoever takes the pact of the blade, but...
Oh, okay.
Yeah, you just take the pact of the blade.
Yeah, but... If you're taking Hexblade, of course you're going to choose Pact of the Blade, because why wouldn't you?
Right.
If you didn't, you're doing yourself a disservice. That's what's happening.
I thought this was a great character concept. It just sounds fun. I instantly thought of when I grew up watching the Disney flicks with the seven dwarves and their little whistling song. I would be whistling that if I was running this character every session.
Pretty funny character. I like the idea.
You moved to 16 tons. What do you get?
Doom.
I don't remember that, Disney.
A lot of Doom.
Another day older and deeper in debt.
Okay. So that'll do it for our character concept, the Accidental Pact. Thank you so much, Robots versus Dinosaurs.
Yeah. Hey, Robert.
Thank you for being a patron. I think that's Lewis, actually.
Yeah.
Cool.
Our monster variant today is the Grungar. Many dangerous creatures stalk the world. Many inspire fear among the populace, few do so like the Grungar. When it roars, many know that death is to follow, and someone, and all who hear it, hope that is not them. That's good. Who wrote that?
Me.
That's really good.
It's probably him.
That's really good. I was like, I don't remember writing that, but that sounds awesome, so I probably didn't write it. So, the origin monster we're going to start with here is the Werebear. You're going to lose the Shape Changer, the Hybrid Form, the Great Axe, and the Multi-Attack.
Yeah. Well, then what does it get?
It gets two new features. It gets Legendary Actions, and it gets Roar. Now, I think I could only find this feature being used once in the Monster Manual.
Really?
But I didn't check throughout Tomb of Foes or... Volos.
Yeah, Volos.
But I only found it used on one. So I was really excited to use this on another monster. So, Roar. It can be used 3 times a day. The creature emits a magical roar. Each time it roars before finishing a long rest, the roar is louder and the effect is different.
That's cool.
Each creature within 500 feet of the creature and able that is within 500 feet of the creature and is able to hear the roar must make a saving throw. The first...
That's like 1,000 foot radius. That's huge.
Yeah, that's massive.
That's
Fireball is 20. And you know how that big that is? That blows up an entire house. This is like...
your whole village.
Yeah, this is like your whole village.
Fifth of a mile, man.
That's
This is a what? No, I guess that's too short. I was going to say 8 kilometers. I'm like, no.
So, the first roar.
You're at least killing the whole cul-de-sac with this.
Yeah. Each creature that fails a DC 14 wisdom saving throw is frightened for 1 minute. Oh, that's not so bad. And frightened creature can repeat the saving throw at the end of each of its turns, ending the effect on itself on its turn. Oh, that's not bad.
No, that's just a regular, frightened effect.
I mean, frightened's still annoying. But...
I mean, frightened sucks, yeah, but it's like,
second roar, each creature that fails a DC 14 saving throw is now deafened and frightened for 1 minute.
That's
and frightened creature is paralyzed.
Ah.
And they can repeat this on each of its turns, ending the effect on a success. The third roar, each creature makes a DC 14 constitution saving throw, and on a failed save, a creature takes 1848 thunder damage and is knocked prone. On a successful save, the creature takes half as much damage and isn't knocked prone.
So, pretty much, this thing has three different AoE moves that just ramps up every time it does it.
Yes. Yep.
Hell yeah.
Yeah, it's like, I'm for some reason, who is it, Entei, that Pokemon that's got the big, and it looks like a giant, like, lion tiger thing? I envision that every time I was reading this.
Yeah, I think that's right.
Yeah.
So, that's pretty cool, right? But those are actions. So guess what? That means it takes at least 3 rounds. That wasn't fast enough for me.
Nope.
So I gave it some legendary actions. The Grungar can take 2 legendary actions chosen from the list below.
That's funny. Roar
and attack, which takes 2 actions. And the Grungar makes 1 attack with its bite or claw.
Oh, wow. So you can just make this go through all 3 of its roars just like instantly if they somehow all keep succeeding and it realizes this.
Yes.
On the next person's turn, it's going to do it again.
Yeah, but it is worth noting that it can only use it 3 times a day. So once it uses them all.
Yeah, but it has to finish her long rest.
But the goal was to compound the difficulty.
Yeah.
As quickly as possible. Now, that sucks for the players. That'll teach you to ignore your constitution.
Yeah, there's no way. Like, that. Okay, I just want to state real quick. This has 3 different saving throws.
Mm-hmm. Are they all different?
They're all different, I'm pretty sure.
Well, 2 more wisdom.
But still, that targets 2 different
Yeah, and not saves. Everyone has... I don't know if anyone has one or the other. I guess Paladins.
Yeah, Paladin has wisdom and...
Charisma. Never mind. Charisma.
Well,
yeah, so not even Constitution.
Cyrus, like, can the bard get in the ability like that?
You know what? Send me an email as a reminder, and next time I build a new bard, maybe I'll include a dope ass feature like that. It'd be like a rock band bard where he's just screaming.
Okay. Or one really loud bass note.
Yeah.
Trembling everything around it.
Like an FLCL.
There was there's also in Digimon, the one guy plays the big guitar and it just trembles everything around it. That would be a dope ass bard. Send me an email for that, because that's awesome and I think I can do something with that.
And my axe. Boom.
I do love the axe guitar thing.
Yeah. It's always a good idea.
That's not a magical item that bards can use. There you go. There's your idea. You're welcome.
Would a bard ever use an axe? Until now.
Well, I had a barbarian who used an axe. No, never mind. He used a maul.
A little bit different.
A little bit.
Accomplishes almost the same thing.
Anyways, that'll do it for our monster variant, the Grungar.
That's pretty good.
Austin, or you want to take the encounter?
I think I'm the next one. The encounter of the podcast is the Imprisoned Spirit, submitted by Charles Kuntz. Thank you, Charles.
Patron.
Yeah.
I didn't write that in there. I'm a schmuck.
He's a patron, I'm sorry. The character struggled to get through an ancient passage trap, door, or other obstacle. Due to the nature of the challenge, they must seek out help to traversing the lost pathway. This forces the characters to seek out the aid of one who was around when the pathway was created. Rumor has it that there was an ancient spirit bound in an ironwood tree by an iron rod. The spell only allows the spirit free at dusk, vanishing at the first rays of light. Rumor has it.
Ooh. Yeah, that popped
Rumor
in my head too.
Has it. I saw it, I couldn't help myself. The spirit is Timon Anaristos. Sure.
Close enough.
He's lawful neutral, he's male, and he's a banshee. A ghostly, translucent human with a long face, tangled silver hair, and large white eyes. He wears plain clothing and a clan medallion hangs around his chest. He knows the secrets of the pathway, but will only part with them if the characters will aid him in attaining his freedom by removing the rod that seals him. Now, there's probably a reason for that, but we'll see. He is found near the crossroads, near an old iron cage used to retain thieves and bandits. The rod has been placed into the iron wood by something with immense strength and requires a successful DC 23 strength dexterity. Strength athletics, not dexterity. You can't use both. Check to pull free.
It's worth pointing out that a character with 20 strength would need a 19 or 20 to succeed on this.
Yeah.
And that's not, and that's assuming you don't have proficiency with athletics, although let's be real here. Most strength-based most characters do. Probably do.
Yeah.
The characters are likely to approach this one of three ways. The characters attempt to intimidate Timon in any way, succeed or not. He chooses to attack the party for the rude behavior. You just get...
Okay, dick.
He's like, all right, fine. I guess I'll haunt you like everyone else who comes in here. Should the party be neutral or indifferent in their support, he freely gives them the information they seek and then leaves to seek revenge on those who wronged him.
Oh, shit.
He's just pissed. If the characters choose to be friendly and take interest in his story, learning of his forced binding to the tree by his foul family and ruining his afterlife, then he shares a secret alternative to deal with the obstacle, one that leads to additional treasure along the way. It's good to be a good guy.
You have me at money.
Right. First of all, I want to thank Charles for submitting this. I did have to rewrite it so it fit our new format, but I did like this idea. I like it for a couple different reasons. First of all, this is investigative based. You have to actively go in. Okay, we found this blockage. Now we have to get around it, but we can't do it without some help. We need to go find some help.
Mm-hmm.
This can apply in so many different scenarios that it makes it easily droppable into any story or campaign,
right?
Which is fantastic. I love that he included short details such as the reason he was bound was because of his family trying to ruin his afterlife for whatever reason. That gives the DM a lot of fiat to twist and turn why that is.
Yeah.
Either he was a dick, they were dicks, or they were all dicks.
Either there's way, usually there's no way around it. Yeah.
Don't be a dick.
I also really like the insane strength check that they have to do, because I'm assuming this is like magically bound and someone's just trying to like just raw man this thing and they're like, hey, guys, magic sucks.
And that's interesting because that's the other thing that I think is left open to the DM. If it's magically bound, if somebody just used dispel magic, boom, pull it right out. Or maybe they need a special item and he shares that, hey, I need you to go find this to weaken this spell.
It's like a corkscrew for a steel rod, like one for you is like a wine bottle. Like, I just gotta twist this thing in here and pull.
But it doesn't have as much detail as I think would really make this complete. But I do like that it's open enough that as the DM...
You can kind of just take some creative freedom with it.
But
yeah.
He does give us...
just enough to put you on track.
Yeah, and the results of how the players interact, which I think is really great.
Mm-hmm. I do like how there's, I guess, multiple endings, even though, like, in D&D, technically there's going to be, a near infinite amount of endings to whatever you do, because I guarantee you, even if you run a module, the players are going to find some other way to fuck it all up, and they're not going to find out.
Great job, Charles. Thank you so much for the submission. Good one. I really enjoyed this. That will do it. Our encounter of the imprisoned spirit. Now, technically, I think you should go next.
Technically?
Would you like to do our magic item?
Our magical item today is the debate club.
I see.
But it is a weapon, which is a club, which is uncommon. This thick wooden club is cracked, battered, and altogether not much to look at. But it has a most pervasive line of reasoning, if you will.
Yeah. So what is this?
You gain a +1 bonus to attack and damage rolls made to magic weapons so far, standard, which is alright.
Cool.
But when you fail a charisma persuasion check while holding this weapon, you use an action to attempt to frighten somebody with the debate club's menacing presence within 30 feet of you.
Ah.
If the creature can see or hear you, it must succeed on a DC 13 wisdom saving throw or be frightened of you until the end of your next turn. Oh yeah, well I went. Oh yeah, well I have a club. Think about that.
I'm the one with the big stick here.
On a subsequent turn, you can use your next action to extend the duration of this effect on a frightened creature until the end of your next turn.
It's a good one.
This effect ends if the creature ends its turn out of your line of sight or more than 60 feet away from you.
I just want to imagine someone's running after him.
If the creature succeeds on a saving throw, you can't use this feature against the creature again for 24 hours. Now you can use it a number of times equal to your charisma modifier, minimum of once, and when you finish a long rest, you regain all expended uses. When I read this, the first thing that came to mind was... I never actually read this, but I read the example from like the Discworld book series, where the characters were trying to get into a noble's house, and the guy up front, do you have an appointment? No, but we have an axe.
That gets us an appointment.
It's so, like, I imagine he just looks down at his clipboard, he looks back at you, and he's like, scribbles down the name. All right, you're in. Just get in there.
No. An axe is an implement used to inflict harm on people. An appointment is a preset amount of time for somebody so you can meet them. So, no, tell your boss we don't have an appointment, but we have an axe.
So, there's a really great game that just came out and is blowing up the PS4, the PC, and mobile called Genshin Impact.
And yes, that is it's exploded and out of proportion.
I think it's already, in the first, like, 24 hours, I had over 10 million... players.
Probably. It doesn't surprise me.
Very much feels kind of like Breath of the Wild to begin with.
Yes, there's a lot of very similar mechanics.
Yeah. Yep. So, but anyways, one of the first magic items I got was a debate club, and I could not help. I was like, I've got to do something with this. So you always see the movies where somebody's trying to persuade somebody to do something, and then they just hit their baseball bat on their palm and get what they want. That's kind of the direction I took with this.
Right.
And more importantly, it's a club, which I don't see a whole lot of them because optimally they're not that kind of club.
I regret nothing.
I am who I am.
To me, it was just a great, thematic weapon that just kind of made sense. What's really cool is it goes off of failing arguments, which
lose the argument, and then you're like, oh well, luckily I have this stick,
and which hopefully can change the situation to your probably favor, maybe
for the worse, but you right. know,
I didn't say it was gonna make the situation better, to change the situation.
I like to buy an argument.
No. You just hit him.
It is worth noting that this does require attunement, so you can't just pass the damn thing around till you get what you want.
Hey, it's your turn to use the debate club. Yeah, we're part of the debate club.
What? No, he's just part of the debate club.
Old handy. Not that kind of club. Well, not with that attitude.
I think that'll do it for our magic item, the debate club.
Pretty good. Oh, you want me to do it?
Yeah, sure, go ahead.
Sure.
I forgot that he just read the other
one. So, the Dungeon Master tip today is player create...
What? That sounds good. Go with that.
Player character rumors by Pink Dice GM on Twitter. Yay, Twitter.
Love me some tweets.
In recent games, I require players to write 5 rumors related to their character's reputation. Too good, too bad, 1 false. I later pass these out to other players as things their PCs would have overheard. It spawns great roleplay. I can actually see a lot of use for
this.
That.
And
it's something stolen. Simple.
I know. And this really could be a lot of fun. And if players start to have fun with this, what they write down as the one that's not false.
Oh, because you can make up anything. Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh, this is so... Like, could you imagine writing some bullshit line like, you're afraid of this one thing? And the rogue figures it out, or the bard. Somebody likes to play tricks regularly, and they're constantly like putting these things that show up. And like, why do they? It's so weird. Every time I wake up, there's a dead spider in my shoe. I don't know what's happening. He's like, does that scare you? Huh? Does it? Does it? Like, are you scared?
No.
Waiting for a reaction.
Or how players can react to each other. Dude, I heard this interesting rumor about you. Look, man, there's only one sheep. What were you talking about? What were you talking about? Not that, but I'm not curious.
I like that, feeding off each other.
He's like, how did you... No. It was apparently about a cupcake. Sheep? Becca! there's a different story we're trying to learn here now.
Right? You gotta try to unreveal the truth.
It's like the woman's like, I just saw my son summoning demons. Right, now what about the demon?
Right. I think this is cool because, A, you can have a lot of fun with the rumors.
Oh, for sure.
But it also builds potential character development, because if I write something down that's true that says, you know, I murdered my brother.
Whoops.
And they hear that as a rumor. Are they going to, how is that going to proceed? Because did I murder my brother because he was doing something bad? Did I murder my brother because he killed the entire clan?
Oh.
I'm looking at you, Uchiha.
Old Handy. Is that what you think? It's when I was trying to learn Fireball.
That'll get you out of it. It was an accident. It just happened. You know how investigating magic spells is? You
just
drink
do
this
it.
Tonic, and this thing happens. Next thing you know, you're
flying through the air, and I'm riding a dragon.
Or a sheep.
Or a sheep.
I think he was talking about blowing up a sheep, but...
Oh, yeah. Gotcha.
But still, it applies to so many things.
I think this is a great DM tip, and I will probably be incorporating it in our next run, because I think this is...
It's pretty good.
Absolutely,
yeah,
fantastic.
I like it a lot.
Takes little or to zero prep. As the DM, I would recommend keeping track of all this. Like, write them down somewhere where you can reference them later. And especially maybe keep track of how it, the players react and what kind of stems from it.
Mm-hmm. Just write down, just put them on, index cards. Mm-hmm. That could just be really good, yeah.
Yep.
That'll do it for our Dungeon Master tip, player character rumors.
I like that.
Our player tip of the podcast is...
Don't be a dick!
And you can avoid dickitude by take their focus. Now, many casters need some sort of magical arcane focus to channel their power through.
Yep.
Wizards have arcane focus. Some druids have druidic focus. Clerics have their holy symbol. A great way to weaken an enemy caster is attempt to snatch their arcane focus. Now, you can take it right from their hands. Now, there's not really normal mechanics for this, but there is one in particular that can do this directly without any... say from your DM.
Mm-hmm.
The Battlemaster Fighter excels at this. They have their disarming attack that allows you to force them to drop one item that they're holding. Now, obviously, what is the most common thing you would think?
Rogue.
No, like weapon or shield.
Like,
what I would
like
think.
A wand or something.
Yep. Yeah, like knock something out of their hands. You think weapons, generally. That's what I did.
Like
I guess
a sword or like a shield.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can just get rid of it. Or like that halberd that guy is wielding and you realize it's probably magical. Knock it out of his hand, take it.
Yeah, kick it so it slides over to your little rogue buddy who can pick it up.
Yep. Or just have like a rogue pick their pocket before the battle starts.
Well, you would have to know that they are those sorts of casters and have those implements first.
Now,
yeah.
That would also require...
It's still an option.
You also requires your players to, you know... be prepared.
Yep.
That doesn't happen.
Depends on the group. But yes.
Yeah, it's true.
But anyways, this is interesting. So yeah, you can argue that you do sleight of hands and pickpocket them or anything, but having an actual mechanic directly in combat to basically strip a wizard, a druid, a cleric of some of their power. Now, it's not going to stop all of them, right? Because they can still do... No. Don't you require those?
You kind of need one. For everything.
So you can totally shut down a caster with this ability.
Yeah, I remember that gun mage your players or your
what?
If you bought the gun mage and your DM's getting real pissy, you might want to hide your arcane focus a little more. Because the DM's going to be like, I'm going to disarm strike this motherfucker.
Yeah. Well, and it's worth noting that you don't necessarily have to be a Battlemaster fighter. You can pick up the feat.
Yeah, there's
the Martial... Martial
Adept?
Yeah, that's the one.
I think that's the one.
And you could pick this up
that's pretty good.
Regardless of which class
which is a good
use of that, I would say. Either disarming to get rid of weapons, or more importantly, stop a caster dead in their tracks.
Yeah, because what would they do? They're going to punch me?
They're going to fucking run away, I would imagine.
There's like, hey, I need that.
Okay, I did look this up, actually, and it's... The, answers the question of, do you need a spellcasting focus to cast spells? Well, yes, but actually, no. But it comes down to, what spell are you using?
Okay, how so?
Because, like some spells only require like, a verbal component, for example.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah, so I guess you wouldn't need an arcane focus just to speak some
words.
Okay, so and some spells do list a arcane focus as part of its required materials, so.
Okay.
Interesting.
So, how many actually is that, then?
I don't know.
Not a clue.
I'm just doing some quick.
Well, yeah, because they would say anything that says has any material components, actually. Yeah. Because the arcane focus is supplement for material components. You can do either or. It's flavor, basically. So basically, anything that requires a material component that's not got a money cost to it.
Yeah.
I envision. So
interesting.
Anyways, I think it's fantastic and clever, and that was something that I don't know why I hadn't stumbled across before. Or even thought of, because apparently I only think of this stuff when I'm actively looking for ways to break the game.
Mm-hmm.
But that's half the fun.
That's true.
Yeah, that was a good player tip.
Yeah, all like the scrying, for example, does require like a focus worth at least 1,000 gold pieces, for example. So
that's rough.
All right, that'll do it for our player tip of the podcast.
Don't be a dick.
And you can avoid dickitude by taking their focus away, little bastards.
This requires some more research on my part, because I'm not really curious about that.
Quite a bit.
All right. That'll do it for our show today. Please join us on our next episode. As I mentioned earlier, Jeff Stevens is going to be joining us. We're going to be talking about his upcoming Kickstarter that launches October 6th, called the Potbelly Kobold. So I'm super excited by that. If you haven't already and you want to get a sneak peek of what's in, head on over to CritAcademy.com and go to our blog section and look for Slime Cave in Norwell. I'll go ahead and put the post in the link in the post. You can check it out. It's written by James Intercasso. Big, big name in the D&D world.
Yeah.
So. Okay, that's right. The Arcane Focus basically functions as a substitute for spell materials worth under a gold piece. So
yes.
Anything that does not have a material component, go nuts!
Yeah, and I don't know how... I know the wizard, a lot of them require that, but I know there are some that don't.
Cantrips probably not so much, but...
Yeah.
Probably.
I don't know. Find a popular cantrip like Firebolt. Alright.
Like Eldritch Blast.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just verbal and somatic.
Okay.
Oh, there you go.
So you're not going to gimp them entirely. That's a shame.
But they are going to be...
But you still could screw them over.
Oh, yeah. They will definitely be having some trouble.
They shoot a little fireball. Yeah. Psst. Oh, man. If that's all you got, your boat.
Yeah. Okay, they'll still have their cantrips, but they probably won't have their leveled spells. So. Yeah.
Right.
Most of them, anyway.
Right.
Yeah. If you have any feedback, unearth tips and tricks, or topics you'd like us to discuss, please send them to us. You can email them to us at critacademy@gmail.com or find us on Twitter and Facebook and obviously Twitch. And YouTube at Crit Academy.
We hope you enjoyed your experience here at Crit Academy. If you did, you can help others find the show by leaving a, hopefully, 5-star review on iTunes or your platform of choice.
Please do that.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Or just send us a message telling us how much you enjoyed the show. And also, be sure to give us a like and a share.
I had no idea that the more reviews you have, the higher it pushes you up in the ranking. So, do that, please. Thank you. Make sure to subscribe to our show at CritAcademy.com. Follow us on Twitch and on YouTube. Specifically, follow us on YouTube, man. We need those more subscribers. Hit that subscribe button. Get our loot. I know Ian's been putting out great short, 5-minute videos from our snippets from our videos. So definitely check that out. Or you can also sign up at our website so we can help you on your future adventures as well as be entered to win cool prizes each and every single week. You can also visit our fellowship members there as well. If you're not checked out Lore Smith's content, I've talked about Lore Smith extensively. His content's amazing. One of my favorite third-party content creators. He does amazing work, and him and his team are just awesome. Also, check out Gabe and Jeff's Inter-Party Conflict. Single-handedly, one of my favorite discussion D&D podcasts. And I make sure to catch every episode. Those guys are doing awesome work, and you really should support them. Follow them on their social media and all that stuff. They need your support. Go over there. Wow. It's a short episode.
Yeah.
That's okay.
Yeah.
That happens.
I am your host, Justin.
I'm your co-host, Austin.
And I'm your co-host, Ian. Thanks for listening.
Keep your blades sharp and spells prepared, heroes.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.